Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Cosmo Happy Hour. It's everything you would talk about with your best friends, from sex to celebrity to entertainment.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
Happy Valentine's Day, you guys. Because it's Valentine's Day, that means it's time for things to get steamy in the bedroom. Or should I say, because it's Cosmo, even steamier in the bedroom. Here at Cosmo, we love, completely are obsessed with, live and die for 50 Shades of Grey, and could not be more excited for the sequel 50 Shades Darker, which of course you guys all know is out this week since you've probably already seen it. But what do the guys in our life think about the 50 Shades phenomenon? I'm Alisa Benson. This is Cosmopolitan.com's Happy Hour podcast. And today we are talking about what guys think about 50 Shades of Grey. Joining me on the panel today is a friend and contributor to Cosmopolitan.com, Frank Caballa, who you guys know better as Cosmo Frank. Hi, Cosmo Frank.
How's it going? Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, this is exciting.
I feel like, Cosmo Frank, per usual, we're asking you to just basically represent what all men everywhere in the world think about 50 Shades.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. As always, I'm going to do my best. I will certainly fall short and fail miserably, but I'm going to give it a valiant effort here.
You're going to give it a valiant effort.
Yeah, although I think in this specific instance, this is a pretty united front.
It's a pretty united front. So one thing that you and I don't have in common about this is that you have actually already seen 50 Shades Darker.
I got roped into it, and you did not yet.
Yes.
So
I'm going tonight. I already have my tickets.
Okay.
7:30 p.m. Yeah. Showing.
I do not envy you. I would say I didn't so much see it as I was subjected to it.
But you were subjected to it. Okay, so you went with your wife.
Yeah, I did.
She dragged you kicking and screaming. Like, how did it come up?
I think she has a love.
Did you guys go on opening night, like the midnight screening?
No. We went yesterday at like 6 p.m.
because okay.
We're old people.
Right.
So yeah, no, we went pretty early. It was still relatively crowded. She has a bit of a love-hate relationship with it.
Right.
I don't think she's read all of the books, but she saw the first movie. She's definitely read the first book.
Did you see the first movie?
I did. I saw the first movie, and I read the first book. Again, all for Cosmopolitan, not on my own time.
Sure, sure. Wait, did you review the first movie when it came out?
I did.
Oh,
I did.
So long ago.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Not long enough.
But so you were actually the perfect person, because not only did you see the first movie, review it for the site, read the first book, but you had something then to compare 50 Shades Darker to.
Yeah.
And so on a scale of like one to, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a 50 Shades joke and I can't. How many, like on a scale of 1 to 10? Just going to go there.
In a vacuum, on its own as a film, it's maybe a 4, and that's being generous.
Okay.
Against the first movie, I'd give it a 7 or an 8.
Because the first movie, honestly, was terrible.
It was,
I'm with you there.
It was really bad. Nothing happened in it. This is one where I could at least say, if my wife really wanted to go, if you're a guy out there and your wife or girlfriend really needs to drag you to it, it's an easy way to get brownie points. It's not as bad as the first one.
It's not as bad.
You'll be able to sit through it.
And so did you find it, you're saying you'd be able to sit through it, not exactly a ringing endorsement. Was there any part of it you found like sexy, like a little like tingle in your pants?
Honestly, just because of what happens throughout the rest of the movie, I was still processing some of the weirder choices that they made.
Yeah.
So that even like the softcore Cinemax porn sequences.
Yeah.
I wasn't really processing probably the way I should have.
Right.
It did feel a little bit sexier. There feels like there's a little more chemistry between the two leads than there was in the last one.
And that was my, I know some of our readers and listeners out there probably did really like the first movie, but my feeling about it, and I feel like kind of the general feeling, at least in the Cosmo office, was that it felt very joyless. Like the sex in the first movie, the sex didn't really feel very like sexy.
Yeah, it was weirdly sterile.
Yeah, sterile is a good word. And the movie was very serious.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like part of, there's sort of like a like haha factor to reading the books.
Right, right.
Yeah,
yeah,
like it's a little more,
it's
like
a little bit of an, there's an inside joke almost there.
Yeah.
Where it's definitely meant to be hokey. It's definitely meant to kind of have that feel to it.
Yeah.
Whereas the first movie played it so self-serious that it was just painful to sit through. Whereas this one, again, on its own, I can't say it's a great movie, but it's certainly way, way better than the first movie and certainly exceeded my incredibly low expectations for it.
And did it make you more or less interested in like going home and having sex?
I would not call it an aphrodisiac.
Right. You told me there was a scene I won't cut you off when you're talking about the juicy stuff.
We were laughing through a lot of it
together. Good.
So it was fun. It was a fun experience, but yeah, it's just still, you know, again, it's that like Skinamax light, like BDSM light, you know, it's such a big deal that he handcuffs her.
Yeah.
And that's really the extent of it in the movies. That's as far as he goes. And it's treated as such a huge deal that he's so kinky.
Right. Handcuffs.
Yeah, exactly. And it definitely didn't make me want to have sex any more or less than I would have when I got
home.
I also ate a whole huge tub of popcorn so that probably countered any sexy feelings I would have had otherwise.
So the effect it had on your sex life was completely neutral.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the breakdown of people in the theater? Was it a lot of couples? Was it like girls with their friends?
It was definitely a few couples. Couple people by themselves, actually, which I was impressed with. I was like, good for you. You know, a few people who, there's an older woman right behind us who I think hated the fact that I was laughing through a lot of it. I was quiet.
Yeah.
I wasn't that annoying loud.
Right.
And I was stifling my laughter, but she was obviously zoned in. She's like, I want complete silence throughout the film. I would say there's actually a surprising mix of people, young and old.
And you said that this is like maybe going to be a little bit of a spoiler, but right before we started recording, you told me there was a scene that you haven't been able to stop thinking about.
Yeah.
Now I like want to know. So if you guys don't want to know, just like fast forward 30 seconds or like do that on a podcast.
Yeah, I suppose this is a major spoiler, except the whole thing is resolved in literally 5 minutes. And that's part of what I'm taking issue with.
Right.
So I guess it's a
spoiler,
but it's
not. It's like a stupid 5 minute plot twist. Okay.
So there's a scene where they're talking on the phone. He's away in Portland, I believe, and they're talking on the phone. They're kind of flirting. They're on good terms at this point, and all of a sudden his helicopter's crashing, and it's that abrupt. It goes from them texting to him crashing in a helicopter,
right?
And she's worried, and then he just shows up. Like, it's on the news. Everyone's freaking out. His whole family's freaking out. He just shows up,
right?
And it's legitimate. It's a 5 minute sequence, and it adds nothing to the movie,
right?
And it happens so late in the film too. It's so bizarre.
That's interesting, because I mean, I remember reading the book way back in the day, and that happens in the book, but I feel like in the book they drag it out a lot more. You guys are going to remember, if I say this wrong, you guys will be able to call me on it, but I almost think that she's like at a dinner in the book. There's like a dinner with his family, and they're like all worried.
She's out to drinks with brother, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Yeah.
I think it's his brother, right?
But it's definitely more like sustained in the book, which is actually also kind of annoying in the book, just because you're like, well, you know, this isn't the kind of story where they're going to kill off the main character.
Right.
So it feels a little... But yeah, it's almost like why...
That was the sense I got. It's exactly what you're saying, is it felt shoehorned in, almost as if they were filming as they went along and realized, oh, wait, this was a major moment in the book.
Right.
Let's get this in there quick before we wrap everything up.
Right.
And that's really how it felt.
I think in the third book it comes out that like one of his former submissives is like crazy and after them.
That's in this one.
That's in this one.
A little bit, yeah.
God,
she's...
I remember nothing. I'm the worst 50 Shades fan. So isn't it that she sabotaged the helicopter?
You don't know that in this one. So you've now ruined the third film for me and I have no reason to go see it, which is incredibly unfortunate. So she's in and out of it, and it's certainly insinuated that Anastasia, Anna's former boss, may have had something to do with it. There's a few insinuations that something sinister is going on behind the scenes, but...
And I felt like that was one of the reasons that the second book in some ways was more interesting, is because there is a little, even though it's like, to be honest, not that well developed, a little more of that thriller element. Did that come through in the movie?
Not really.
No.
I feel like the seeds are planted for it, and maybe the third one will now be even better. That rare instance where the trilogy gets better as it goes on. There was a few very minor conflicts.
Okay.
That, again, all got resolved relatively quickly. all because Christian Grey has, you know, tons of money and resources.
Right.
He's kind of this weird romantic Superman where nothing can really go wrong because he just has so much going on for him.
Right, exactly. He's like a completely, like an unreal superhero.
Yeah.
Which is almost a little boring.
Right, exactly.
But whatever, I still want to get with him. I want to ask you in just a second, I'm going to give you a minute to think about this, but okay. I want to ask you what your favorite, even though you've basically said none of them, but your favorite sex scene in the movie was. So think about that. In the meantime, I'm excited to share with all of you guys one of my favorite new shopping apps called Spring. I love how easy it is to find all the latest designer clothing in one easy-to-use app. Plus, they have free shipping and returns, so I'm saving even more money on my purchases. My favorite part is that I can follow brands or products that I love and track them on my personal shopping list so that I receive alerts whenever the products go on sale. Download the Spring app in the App Store or go to shopspring.com now to start saving on all the latest fashion and beauty trends. Get free shipping and free returns on your spring purchases with no spending minimums. I just want to say that again because I think that's one of the things that is so cool about Shop is they basically pull in a ton of clothes, accessories. It's a really great shopping experience from a ton of different retailers, but there's free shipping and free returns on everything. So even if you're buying something that is available elsewhere, you might want to just go ahead and buy it from shopspring.com because you get that free shipping and free return bonus. And as an added perk, use my code COSMO at checkout to take 20% off your first purchase. That's shopspring.com or shop through the Spring app, which of course you can download in the App Store, and use code COSMO for 20% off. All right, Frank, your time is up. Favorite sex scene.
He gave me a lot of time to think about it. I didn't need that time.
You knew right away.
Oh, yeah. This is late in the game here, so potentially some minor spoilers. But a big point of contention for Christian Grey throughout the film is that he has areas that she's not allowed to touch on his body.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually frames it out for her. And it's essentially his nipples that she's not allowed to go near. It's his
That's
upper
the
chest.
No-go zone.
Yeah. And, you know, she at one point literally frames it out with lipstick, and it's his nipples. And, towards the end of the film, to show that he trusts her, he lets her, you know, I guess, tweak on him. And then it leads to sex, obviously.
Oh, my God. Very sexy.
So, yeah, that was definitely my favorite, but probably not for the reasons you think.
Yeah, why was it your favorite? I think I need you to unpack that a little bit.
Just because I just found it incredibly funny that was his initiation, was here you go. You can finally get all up on my chest. Let's do this.
Yeah.
As if it was such a huge deal.
Yeah.
But no, they're actually
pretty erotic.
To be completely fair, there's no way of framing them, but the sex scenes were definitely way better than they were previously. There's a couple that do stand out a little bit to me.
Yeah.
But I have no real way of you know, just kind of the one that happened at 40 minutes or the one that happened at
an hour and 10. Right.
So there's a couple that did stand out.
But. And what did you think about the elevator scene, which is one of the most famous scenes from the book?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He fingers her in an elevator.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. All right.
You don't even remember that. Okay, that means it sucks.
No.
I've actually heard that scene is not particularly remarkable in the movie.
Yeah, you don't see too much. Not too much is going on. It's relatively quick. It's actually an interesting sequence because he puts these, I'm probably not going to call them correct thing, but I think they're like Benoit balls or whatever.
Yeah, so you're right.
They're up in her.
Yeah.
And then he takes them out, you know, and they go to town. The entire time, I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that one of those extras had to stand there while she pretended to get fingered in an elevator. And I just kept thinking about the stories that this woman probably had.
Right, of them doing that take again and again.
Yeah, over and over. Because when you start thinking of it in that respect, it gets less and less sexy that they just had to sit there.
Although, to be fair, don't you think that would be an amazing, like, story to tell all your friends?
Oh,
if you're like,
yeah,
you know, you're a struggling actor out in Hollywood, exactly, and people are like, are you in anything I know? And you're like, well, actually,
yeah, the finger blasting scene in 50 Shades Darker, ever heard of it?
Right. So good. Okay, on that note, I think it is time for us to go ahead and ring up our first guest to keep this combo on 50 Shades moving right along. Our first guest is the president of the Hollywood chapter of the National Organization for Women. He has a zillion degrees, including an MA in Women's Studies and Religion, an MA in Applied Women's Studies, a BA in English and Women's Studies, and his areas of focus are gender and sexuality studies, LGBT history, 20th and 19th century American women's history. Basically, he spent plenty of time studying women. Welcome, John Erickson. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us to talk about 50 Shades, my favorite thing to talk about on Valentine's Day morning.
Maybe mine too.
Yours too. Yours too. So right off the bat, John, tell me your feelings. This episode of the podcast is all about what men think about 50 Shades of Grey. Tell me, what is your sort of one sentence opinion on 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, my one sentence opinion on 50 Shades of Grey is, girl, we got problems. frankly, because 50 Shades of Grey in the movie is so much more vanilla than the books, and I didn't think that was actually possible. But the ways in which 50 Shades of Grey just tightens and emphasizes the trope that patriarchal culture has the full control over a woman's body and sexuality, and it's up to them to decide what type of sexual pleasure they not only get, but also the woman gets. This is really problematic in a world where we need to see more, you know, empowerment of women and girls, and we need to see a fully sexualized character on screen that can get an orgasm by herself and be the dominant one if she wants to as well.
And have you seen both of the movies that are out now, John?
I unfortunately have not seen the second movie yet.
I actually haven't either. So
I would not use the term unfortunately for the record.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I did see the first one on a plane to Mexico with one of my best friends who is extremely sex positive, as am I.
Yeah.
But basically, in the middle of the plane, we screamed vaginal clamps because it's exclaimed by Anna in the movie, I believe, during the contractual scene out loud so the whole plane could hear us. So, everyone knew what we were watching.
Everyone knew what we were watching. I actually am really curious about watching that on a plane, because surely there was some of it must have been edited, right?
I bought it and we watched it on my iPad.
Oh, got it.
So we got to watch the full unrated, if there even is an unrated version.
Yeah, I thought you meant you were watching like the Delta Entertainment Television or whatever, and I was like, I don't think that's the same thing, John.
I would love to be flying home to Wisconsin watching the Delta version of 50 Shades of Grey with a bunch of Midwesterners discovering what that actually means for the first time.
I am kind of with you, though, on the first movie in particular. It's weirdly almost and I want to like dive into the books a little bit, too. But the first movie, Frank and I were talking about this, it's almost a little boring. It feels really joyless. You never really see Anna have an orgasm on screen, or really her expressing any kind of pleasure, which I agree with you is problematic. I do think that's a little different in the book, where we have a little bit more of her internal monologue sort of telling, you know, explaining that she is so into this and that she, you know, blah, blah,
consent,
her inner goddess. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of that, I think, really was wiped out of the first movie. Cosmo Frank, who gave the second movie a 4 out of 10, promises me it's a little better than the second.
It was a generous 4 out of 10.
A generous 4 out of 10. But so, John, I hear what you're saying about the reasons that it's problematic and the reasons we're sort of, you know, that it emphasizes this idea of a man really being in control of a woman's sexual pleasure. But at the same time, for a lot of women, I think this was a sort of expression. This reading these books was a sexual experience that they felt like they weren't getting elsewhere in mainstream culture. Is there any value to that?
Yeah. So look, I'm extremely sex positive. So if this is what gets your rocks off at the end of the day, like go for it. But my question is always the what's next. So, you know, I came home one summer, my mom was reading the book, right? And she was like into it when she was telling me what it was about. And so I was like, okay, this is my mom, a middle-aged, you know, a white woman from, you know, Wisconsin, saying these things. And she seems to be really excited about this book, which is, you know, gratifying her in some type of way when she reads it at night. I'm like, that's an amazing thing, because you have women that are discovering parts or maybe never realizing that these communities are out there, right? And so I say, hey, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you should do. But what you should do is you should go to your local sex store, or you should go take a class where you have somebody at that sex store, you know, teaching you about BDSM culture, teaching you about consensual sex, teaching you about different types of sex play. I mean, if you really want to explore your bodies and sex, like with your partner of your choosing, then that's the type of thing that, you know, more people, if they're getting interested in, is a great thing. But there's other stuff outside of the book that people should be doing, that when I think that they, if they're like awoken in the same way that they're awoken in the book,
right,
when they go and discover all these other communities out there, they might look back in the book and go, oh, wait, that's totally wrong.
Right. But surely, I mean, I could see, and I'm actually curious, was your mom reading the book, was that the first time you had heard about it, or just...
I had heard about it. I had not read it. And so the moment I saw my mom reading it,
right,
I literally took her book from her.
Right.
And then I read it that night.
Right, right. Because I feel like this was one of those phenomenons that was sort of really discovered by, like, the moms of the world. You know, they were, like, all reading it before I think it went a little, like, more mainstream. But so your mom is a perfect example. I'm sure that... your mom reading this book, there's still a big leap between your mom, like, going into a, you know,
exactly,
Babeland and, like, signing up for a class or whatever. I don't even know if they have that in Wisconsin, but you know what I mean.
They have lots of stuff in Wisconsin.
They have lots of stuff. Okay, okay. So, I don't know. I agree with you that this is, like, maybe just the tip of the, like, sexually awakened iceberg, but I still think for a lot of people it might be as far as they get, and I don't know. I think that's kind of a good thing. As problematic as the series is.
I think that if a husband and wife go see this on Valentine's Day and they go home and they want to start exploring and researching and discovering new parts about their sex lives at the end of the day that, you know, empower them to, you know, do something other than missionary, and that's being a very blanket statement,
right?
You know, then that's great, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff to explore out there sexually with your partner outside of the type of culture that 50 Shades of Grey, you know, so-called depicts, you know.
Right.
And one of my biggest problems with the movies and the books, and I think you mentioned this, is the way in which Anna consents. Because in the movies, you get this really extremely disturbing predatory nature that Christian really has, because you don't get to read what's in Anna's mind. And understand kind of like her inner monologue, right? And Dakota Johnson, although she is, I'm sure, a lovely person, can't portray that type of inner monologue on her face as well.
Right.
So you kind of don't get that understanding of what's actually going on between the two of them. And so, you know, for me, the whole time watching the film, and I, you know, if I do go see the second film, you know, the issue of consent and kind of how she's there to, you know, make Christian feel better about his abused past, and, you know, the Madonna whore, you know, mm-hmm, you know, motif that people have, you know, in every movie, it seems like, you know, they just seem to fall into the same trap that most movies with their themes about women's sexuality always fall into.
I think that was definitely one of the things that for me was the most disappointing about the first movie. And I think that was really even a sense we got from our audience, who overwhelmingly just, like, loved it because they're such fans of the series. You know, I think going in, this is the point, I'm babbling, but the point I wanted
to make
is that I think going,
I
think going into the movie, there was a feeling that Jamie Dornan was so hot and was so well cast, and, like, people could really imagine him as Christian, and there was almost a sense that Dakota Johnson was a little like, who is she? She seems kind of like a wet blanket. Like, I feel like that was, those weren't my personal opinions, but that was kind of the feeling going into it. And I think for a lot of people that was reversed. She is actually much more interesting in the movies, and I think, you know, your point about him seeming almost like predatory, I think in the first movie he comes across as so wooden and so sort of disinterested and really unsexy that I think that it ends up being a major failing of the movie, that you don't really see there being any appeal to this guy. And, you know, in addition to the fact that we don't actually see Anna consent or orgasm or really seem any pleasure, you don't even actually really understand why she'd be attracted to this guy who's, like, kind of a dick.
Yeah, she's like this virginal, like, white depiction of, like, this, you know, pure, you know, unrealized the sexual passion that she has in herself, and then along comes, you know, Jamie Dornan's character, and, you know, the rhetoric that occurs after that is problematic. I mean, if you want to see Jamie Dornan act in a predatory way, I mean, you should be watching The Fall on Netflix. I mean, that's when I was watching the movie And then I discovered that TV show. I mean, he literally is a killer of women in that show. And the only way in which he stopped is that you have like one of the most fully realized, I think, and fully sexualized autonomous female characters on television today, Gillian Anderson's cop character, who just totally shuts him down. And the way in which he's trying to destroy and kill these women, he stalks his prey and gets some type of gratification out of killing them, and she recognizes this and that. And I was so disturbed by that kind of depiction by Jamie onto Anna that mirrored the relationship that's present on The Fall, that I was just so taken aback by the movie because of that lack of acting that was there for him,
right,
versus her.
Yeah.
And like Dakota Johnson's, that I was like, whoa, this movie's raising some red flags here.
Yeah, and certainly a lot has been, I mean, like Frank and I were even saying before we jumped on the phone with you, like, I mean, Christian in the books is like kind of a psycho. I mean, I love the guy, but you know, he's reading her email and basically being a stalker.
Buys the company she works for because he can't bow to stand, you know, whatever.
Right. So I can tell Cosmo Frank wants to jump in. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I can't believe I'm the vanguard of the second film here, but to let you guys know, the second movie definitely course corrects some of that. He's still the weirdo who doesn't like being told no, but she definitely takes a lot of initiative throughout the movie. And it's interesting, and I think a little bit backwards in that, like, some of her being dominant is her being dominant by taking him grocery shopping or making him cook for her. And it was a weird dynamic to watch in that respect, because it felt, I don't want to say necessarily antiquated, but a little retro,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, a little bit stereotypical in that
right,
regard.
Right, like, oh, this is how you're exerting your dominance at the grocery store?
He, in general, takes a backseat. It's much more about her. It's much more about what she's going through, and he just kind of shows up to either say, oh, I have a bunch of money, or to remind the audience that he wants to have sex with all the time.
Right.
And that's kind of his his entire arc in that movie.
Yeah, but I'm sort of fine with him being a one-dimensional character that just shows up for sex and...
Yeah, and not to say he was two-dimensional in the first movie, but he kind of fades into the background a little bit more, I feel like, in this one.
Interesting. Maybe that is a testament to, I think, Dakota Johnson really was the star of the first movie, and I think proved herself to be a better actress than he is. But, you know, I have to say, sort of in closing here, I read all the books. I loved them. I appreciated them for what they were. And even though I felt like the Christian Grey character was problematic the entire time I was reading it, I was fine just, like, brushing that aside. And I think part of the reason that I felt fine with that is I felt so clearly like this was a book written for women. You know, I think... in some ways, it felt like a safe space for me. Like, I felt like there was this community of women reading it. It was a female author. E.L. James, like, seems a little crazy, but, like, wonderful in her own right. And I love that she has, like, thousands and thousands of romance novels in her apartment. I've read that.
In her house.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she really wrote this as a romance story for women. And so I was willing to sort of just brush aside the problems I thought with Christian as a character in a way that, you know, if this was something that men were reading that was a little bit meant to be for all audiences, I maybe would have felt like those problems were more serious to me. But I just feel like, as a woman, I feel like we're able to sort of separate the idea of this being a fictional story from saying, like, this is the way that a man should behave in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the way in which his masculinity is depicted, or even the way in which Jamie Dornan, the character itself, I mean, do you remember all the problems that that were out there about him not wanting to be naked and all of this stuff on, you know, that would get out there into the pop culture mainstream about how he wanted his body, you know, depicted through the medium of the media and the movie screen? Where was that about Dakota Johnson? You know, she's the one that is literally naked and you know, being hit with horse hair and horse whip and all that stuff, and he doesn't want to take his shirt off.
Right.
You know?
What a baby.
Well, it's just kind of like, look, I respect your, I guess your, if you don't want to do that for yourself, but, you know, what a position of privilege to be able to say something like that.
Right.
Because, you know, then it just continues to be in part of this problematic relationship. And I agree with you that if there's a community of women reading this and it's opening up their eyes to something that's big, great, and grand outside of what they're normally doing, then that's something that I would never, like, you know, say, oh, you should not do that because of this. I hate those people that ruin the movie because of all of these problems. But if you have these critical conversations like we're having right now, or if you're kind of already hyper realizing that what the problems are with these characters, and you push for a better depiction of female sexuality in film,
right,
or in TV, or in whatever media forms you watch, then that's half the battle. And so we need to make sure the media does stuff like this, and that the media puts out fully realized sexual characters on screen, so we can almost feel like our work is being done,
right?
You know, and that a woman doesn't have to rely on a man to orgasm, you know,
right?
And that, you know, she can do it on her own if she wants. I mean, I just produced a vagina monologue here in West Hollywood, right?
Yeah,
where I live, and there's a monologue in there, which is my favorite one, called "The Woman Who Liked to Make Vaginas Happy,"
right?
And it's all about a woman dominating another woman. And she doesn't want to dominate men because men are scared of moaning. They're scared of a woman's fully realized orgasm.
Right.
And what that actually means, because it, you know, threatens their, you know, male competency or their ability to concentrate on pleasing themselves first. But, you know, she talks about how she loves to hear women moan and make them moan because it's the pleasure of the woman and the full realization of the power of her vagina, of her body. And that's what's important. I mean, we need more of that,
right,
in the movies.
More men.
Versus then a man being like, oh, you know, I'm here to dominate you and have sex with you because, you know, we're going to both orgasm.
Right.
Well, he doesn't have to orgasm. Why can't she just be the one that orgasms,
right,
you know?
Here.
And so, yeah, right. I mean, I'm gay, but, you know, and so, you know, I've never, you know, had the pleasure of being with a woman that way. But it's more than about just, you know, an orgasm for you and an orgasm for me. It's about the pleasure and the reciprocal relationship that you would develop with your partner. And that's where I see the big difference with our culture today. A lot of people don't know the vagina monologues has a monologue like that, but everyone knows 50 Shades of Grey. You know, the tagline is lose control. Like, oh, you're supposed to lose control because,
right,
you know, that's going to allow you this sexual freedom. You know,
right,
let's think about what's being more popular.
Right. That's a really good point. And in some ways I was going to say that, you know, as we've been talking about this, I was almost wondering if the series, you know, the book series in some ways just feels dated. You know, if it was written today, would it be a little different? Would it be a little bit more progressive? But then you look at something like the Vagina Monologues, which, when was that written? A million years ago now?
A while.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you think, you know, it's true. It's true. So, you know.
Yeah.
I guess the best thing we can do is just keep talking about 50 Shades on the podcast.
Well, you know, I'm welcome to come back anytime,
exactly,
and talk about it.
Exactly. But, well, thank you so much, John.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was so great to hear your point of view. Thanks so much. And yes, we'd love to have you back soon.
Wonderful, wonderful. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I know so many of you are busy like me and don't have the time to plan out your meals for the week. I don't even really like have time to go to the grocery store, which is why I've become so obsessed with Blue Apron. You guys know about Blue Apron, their meal delivery service, the biggest and the best. The box arrives at your doorstop. You have everything you need to get started cooking delicious dinners right away. I started doing Blue Apron because of the podcast and I've been completely obsessed with it. It's so fun. I don't know how to cook anything at all and it's easy enough that I can follow along. The meals are so delicious. They're so incredibly flavorful. My roommate and I just like love, love, love doing it. There's brand new menu items. So if you haven't tried it yet, maybe this will convince you. Brand new menu items like roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, which I literally made yesterday for dinner. It was delicious. Udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled egg. And so many other things that you have to try out. You can enjoy it curled up on your couch while watching 50 Shades of Grey with your Valentine, of course, before you go see the sequel. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/cosmo. Again, that's blueapron.com/cosmo to get three meals free with totally free shipping. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/cosmo. Our next guest was in a relationship with a girl who loved 50 Shades, but you guessed it, he felt differently. Welcome, Mateen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. So we're talking all about 50 Shades Grey and what guys really think of it today on the podcast. Tell us about the first time you heard. Oh, my God. Already. Like, you can't even, like, let me finish the question. So, okay. Right off the bat, what was the first time you heard about 50 Shades? Initial thoughts?
I think when the book came out, I don't know. When did the book come out?
Like a while ago now. 2000.
Probably like 6 or 7 years ago. Like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and I was dating a young lady at the time, and, you know, she's trying to spice things up, and she always suggested, like, oh, handcuffs, like, let's do handcuffs. And for me, I was like, well, my people don't have that good of a history with being in handcuffs, so I don't think I should be doing it for excitement.
That's fair.
And then the book came out, and she's like, oh, yeah, this is that. But to me, I just think it's pretty much just smut.
Yeah,
with literature makeup, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it is smut, but I think that's what people like about it. It's like a little sexy. I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of people look at porn. I think a lot of women feel like this is sort of equivalent to that.
Well, it is, but a lot of people don't think that. They're like, oh no, this is not the same as porn, but it is. It's mental porn, which is. Sometimes just as good as visual porn.
Yeah, yeah. So are you anti-porn in general, I take it?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Not even.
Okay, not even. Okay, so it sounded like your ex was sort of taking notes for what to do in the bedroom directly from the books in the movies.
Well, yeah, I mean, she wanted to try some of that stuff, and I'm not, like whips and chains are not, that's not me. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
Like beating and pain and stuff. Like, I don't get how that could be pleasurable.
Okay.
But I'm not, that's just not my thing.
So you're kind of more like vanilla in bed, as they say in the books.
Not vanilla, but I mean, more like Neapolitan ice cream, like the whips and chains, just like frozen yogurt with nuts and bolts on it. Like, that is not, it's not edible.
So did this end up being a problem that your girlfriend at the time was so into this and wanted to try all this stuff from the books? And it sounds like you weren't really into it.
I mean, no, I wasn't into it at all. Like, not at all. And I mean, I guess she was saying that I was being, like, stubborn and not like, taking her thoughts into consideration. But mm-hmm. I mean, if stuff is being done to me, I think that's taking myself into consideration.
Yeah,
because you gotta look out for self first. And if it's not enjoyable, like, why would you want to do that?
Yeah, and I do feel obligated to chime in at this point in the conversation and say, like, of course, at Cosmo we believe all sex should be consensual. You should explore and try things, but make sure both partners are on board. And it sounds like you are just, like, not really on board.
No, I just wasn't on board. Not with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So did you ever read the books?
No, I never read the books because, I mean, I had no interest. I mean, I saw the movie.
Yeah.
And it was an okay movie. I mean, it's just pretty much what the book is, I would assume. But I never had a desire to sit down and read. Well, I have no desire to read books anyway, but not something like that.
And have you seen, so there's two movies out now. The second one just came out. Any chance?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen the second one.
Are you going to?
I don't think I will. No. Not even. I'd rather watch paint dry.
Ouch. So why do you think, you obviously are not a fan of the series. I think a lot of guys out there agree with you. They just don't get it at all. They're not interested. They don't necessarily want to, like, try the things from the book. Why do you think this has been such a phenomenon for women?
I believe it because it was like an escape for people.
Yeah.
Like that housewife that's, you know, that's stuck taking care of the kids and got to cook and clean. You know, she can read this book and escape and feel dirty, but not feel dirty about feeling dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing, because once you feel dirty, oh, I'm doing something dirty. But then if you, like, oh, you get ashamed. But once it becomes, like, mainstream, I feel like people were okay with being dirty.
Yeah.
Like, it made being dirty and something that was taboo not taboo, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I actually feel like that was, like, what a lot of women liked about it. You know, it was kind of sexy. It was sort of the way that I think a lot of mainstream, I don't know if mainstream porn is the right thing to say, but I think a lot of
mainstream
porn. Yeah, but a lot
that's
of porn out there.
Group,
yeah, yeah. But a lot of porn out there, I think, has been typically geared toward a more male audience. And I think a lot of women felt like, oh, this is really for me. And that was kind of what made it interesting. And it was sexy.
Yeah, porn, in a sense, is for men, I believe, anyway, because it's a visual thing.
Yeah.
And women are more stimulated through their mind and things. And I think that this is what gave people the opportunity to experience that, you know,
yeah.
So they could, you know, put themselves in this situation and be this girl and fantasize about this powerful person.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And these things to them.
And so even if you weren't into the things that your, you know, partner at the time was sort of like ripping from the books, which, like, again, everybody has their own sexual preferences, isn't it sort of true that, like, wouldn't you rather have a partner that was at least, like, a little experimental and, like, a little willing to try things versus somebody that just, like, wanted to do the same thing every time? Yes? No?
Yeah,
I don't know.
For me, I feel like, I mean, you have to be. I mean, that's
yeah.
the natural progression of sex. I mean, if you're doing it with the same person over and over again, you're going to have to. You know, you can't eat the same meal for lunch every day. You know, it gets right. kind of boring. So you might
yeah.
throw some hot sauce on it.
Yeah.
To make it taste better or enhance the flavors.
I'm right there with you.
So, I mean, but sometimes, you know, you can't eat everybody's cooking. so you just got to find
the
midpoint where both parties are like, okay, I can deal with this. You know, I might not have the real handcuffs, but the fake ones are okay.
And so if I can ask too, so your girlfriend at the time who got into 50 Shades, was she pretty vanilla before that, do you feel like? Like, is part of your problem that this was, as far as she's
yeah,
concerned,
think,
the only way to be
kinky? Yeah, I think that's what it was. And it was a more of a thing like, hey, let's spice some things up. We're getting pretty stagnant. And it was like, oh, I read this book, and now I'm like, oh, like, got ideas and brainstorming. You know, let's try this. Let's try that. And I mean, it's just certain things, like I said, I just wasn't cool with, so
right.
I mean, call me stubborn or I just want things my way, but yeah.
No, I feel you. That's why she's your ex, huh?
No, it was a lot of other things.
That's a whole other podcast episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, we'll bring you back on for a breakup.
That?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll write my own book about that.
Well, Mateen, thank you so much for chiming in to share your thoughts. I can tell that you have your mind made up about this. I don't think I'm going to be able to convince you of all the wondrous things about 50 Shades.
Oh, no.
No. But thank you for calling and sharing your opinion. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no worries.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you guys be safe. Stay away from criminals.
You too.
Noted. Bye.
All right.
So, Frank, what did you learn today from discussing 50 Shades of Grey in the Cosmo podcast?
I think kind of this theory that I'm starting to have form in my head, because I've been trying for the longest time. I have plenty of guilty pleasures. I have plenty of things that I like that I know are kind of stupid. I know other people think are stupid, and I can typically...
Like what? Just kidding. Okay, guilty pleasures.
You know, but no, you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, everyone has their own hobby. Everyone has their own thing that they do.
For sure.
And I've been trying to figure out why I can't see any value in these things to some extent.
Why you can't see any value in 50 Shades.
Yeah, specifically.
Yeah.
It's not
okay.
that I care about women reading, you know, erotic books. That's all I care about. But
yeah.
But
this in particular
this
is
mind-boggling to you. This one in
particular
was kind of odd to me. And,
yeah.
And a little bit of what it is almost like, because like you said, you know, moms kind of discover this. And it's almost like your mom came to you and was like, hey, have you heard of this band Radiohead? And your mom, like, up until that point, was always listening to, like, you know, top 40 music, always listening to country.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you know, mom, of course, like, everyone's heard of Radiohead. They're kind of like the first band you're going to hear if you're kind of going off the reservation
right.
a little bit, kind of going, you know, into more indie territory. And 50 Shades is almost like the Radiohead of erotica
right.
in that respect, where it's like, you know, it's this big deal. It's this big, you know, cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it might not be the best band out there. There's other things you can, you know, if you want to pull from 50 Shades and there's aspects that you like of it, I feel like there's other authors doing it better. There's other movies doing it better.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I struggle with, I suppose.
Yeah,
right?
It's almost a little eye-rolly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I like Radiohead enough, but they're a little bit overrated. And I feel the same way about 50 Shades. Like, there's other books that, if that's what I wanted to do, I'd probably pull from first.
Okay, I think that's a really good comparison, although totally lost on me since I basically exclusively listened to Top 40 radio. Like, who's Radiohead? Just kidding, sort of. But Frank, thank you so much for joining us. And it was so funny.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, as much as we sort of started off, you know, with that 4 out of 10 rating, so savage.
I stand by that.
I think you actually ended up, of all the men we talked to today, being the one that sort of saw the most silver linings with 50 Shades. You were at one point literally defending 50 Shades Darker.
I felt like I had to be devil's advocate. I felt like I had to be. But that was more for the sake of being devil's advocate.
Right. Okay, fine. Well, Cosmo Frank, thank you as always for being the voice of all men everywhere, every single one of them. It's a high job.
I'm sure they really appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you so much for coming by. We always love getting the chance to work with you at Cosmo. Do you want to shout out your Twitter handle for people who might want to follow you and tweet angry things about your opinions?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to harass me on Twitter, it's greatest weight. That's W-E-I-G-H-T, as in a weight you lift.
I was like, had a moment of actually being totally dyslexic when you spelled that, because you spelled the second part but not greatest. Oh. But I guess because everyone knows
I figured out if you don't know how to spell greatest, then
okay,
don't worry
then
about
don't
it.
Follow me. Okay. And as always, you guys can follow me everywhere at Elisa Benson on Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat. And thank you so much for listening to the cosmopolitan.com happy hour podcast. I hope you have a great Valentine's Day, one of my favorite holidays actually. Wait, Frank, are you going to tell us what you're doing with your wife tonight?
We do it pretty low-key. We do like a dinner at home and exchange gifts and stuff.
Low-key is the way of being like, I plan nothing.
We don't plan anything.
Yeah, okay.
But she knows that, and she doesn't plan anything either.
Okay. We're so not, you're on the same page. Yeah. That's fine.
I'm romantic every day.
Right.
I'm one
you
of
don't
those
need
guys.
A special
yeah.
holiday.
Every day is Valentine's Day in my heart, so.
Okay. But thank you guys, as always, for listening, and I will see you next week. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.